You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and this is a special episode with Brenna Red. But before we speak to Brenna Red, we're going to play one of the brand new songs off the brand new album by The Last Gang. The song is Noise, 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 and that's off the album Noise, 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 out on Fat Records right now.
And demeaning, getting traditional. Paint it up, spike it out. The gang is ready tonight. Take the 42 north, past electric to right. For few of us, though, it could never compare. The noise, noise, noise. I kept it so close, but the words were spoken. It's the last episode when the buses start running and the flash led to right. Head ahead, past the shoulders to the new music, right? For few of us, though, it could never compare. Nostalgia burns a hole in our heads, our heads, gathering down memory, slang deranged, grasping onto a past refrain, staggering down dead memory, slang deranged, holding onto a faded champagne. Gotta go for the glory or give up and fail. Sitting here waiting, hands open tail. If you see me on the corner begging, don't pay my bill. I'm a bit more than nothing, and a charity still. Trying out for years, fighting hand, tooth, and nail. The sad truth is the poor get poorer and fail. Fail, about fail. Staggering down memory, slang deranged, grasping onto a past refrain. Staggering down dead memory, slang deranged. I kept it so close, but the words were spoken. It's the last episode when the buses stopped running and the flask led to right. Head ahead, past the shoulders, to the new music right. To few of us know we can never compare. To few of us know we can never compare. Staggering down dead memory, slang deranged, grasping onto a past refrain.
And we are back. Brenna, how are you? It was a path to get here. We trekked through the mountains, the water, the wind, the snow, but finally we are making it happen. How are you?
I am doing so good this morning, or afternoon, I guess it is. I'm feeling it today.
Well, that you know, Brenna is super cool. She's been in a few bands. This is actually, I guess, the second iteration of The Last Gang, which was a band from like 2007 to 2012 or so, and then it reignited like 2015 or so. Is that right? Or
correct? Yeah, okay. We started off early on, like in the mid 2000s, of just like a local band, and then we really like reestablished in 2013 and like pushed, and we're like, let's do it, let's fucking do this.
And so the new album is real cool. It's got somewhat of a new style for the band in some parts. It's gotten more of a ska and reggae influence, and it's their third album. Brenna, maybe you can just talk about, we've got the ska now, we've got the reggae. I know you're a big Joe Strummer fan. So is that an influence there, or What's the inspiration for some of the reggae and two-tone and even dub, styles?
Definitely Joe Strummer got me into all that stuff. Like, growing up, that was one of my favorite bands. And I always wanted to know, like, well, you know, what bands did they listen to? And there's a lot of cool compilations that, like, Trojan Records put out. One's called Revolution Rocks, Clash Jukebox. And when I learned, I'm like, okay, you know, 5446 and Toots and who he was. And, like, the Sing It Up, Mister, you know, 54, it's all the fucking songs that they got to cover, Pressure Drop. And I'm like, oh, that's not a Clash song. That's a Toots song. And then I dove more into, like, they did a lot of covers and Junko Partner. And I'm like, wow. And then it just opened this door of, I just became just enthralled with, like, reggae and rock steady mainly. And then one of our favorite things to do or to listen to in the van, it's like tour hasn't officially started until we listen to Johnny Greenwood is the controller. It's this compilation by Trojan Records. And our favorite song is Bionic Rats by Lee Scratch Perry. And like, once we listen to that album, we're on the road and it's official.
Can we first of all say R.I.P. the mighty upsetter Lee Scratch Perry? How yes. sad! I it was crazy how he was like posting, like, the listeners probably should know, but if you don't know who Lee Perry is, an absolute legend. He's an extremely important reggae producer. He might have invented reggae, or he's one of the main guys that invented reggae. He's the main guy, one of the main guys that invented dub. He might have invented the concept of remix. He was 85 when he passed away, and like a week before he passed away, he was doing like kung fu kicks on his Facebook, and so we're all real sad. But like Lee Perry, Bionic Rats, what a jam! Why is that such a special? I love that song. Why is it such a special song to you?
It's just so bizarre, like the lyrics and how the flow is, and just I love the hook, Judas and Barnabas, sons of Satan, ooh, like it's so well written. It's such a great hook. It's the song speaks for itself. That's why it's amazing. The song is amazing because it's amazing.
Actually, and let's talk about one of the wonderful things about Lee Perry's songs is that it's not always exactly clear. Like, I don't even really know what I mean. Bionic Rats, you know, he talks about chasing vampires, which is like, you know, bad people or whatever. But it's always like, what is this really about? How important is it to be concrete with lyrics? Because some of your lyrics, I would say, are very concrete, but some are a bit more astral, you know, or cosmic, however you want to phrase it. Ooh. So how important is cosmic lyricism? I'm not cosmic. How important is concrete lyricism? And is that something you even consider, or do the lyrics just come out of you? Here's the real question. I'm throwing a million questions at you at once. When you sit down and write a song, are you walking down the street and pop, the song's in your brain? Or do you say, oh, I like this idea, let me write a song about this idea? What's your process?
I won't try to dive too far into writing a song when I have an idea. I have a Gmail account, you know, that I just have for lyrics or phrases. So whenever I get an idea, you know, mostly, you know, back in the day you'd write it in a book, but I'll just text it to the email or email my email of this little snippet of this line. Like one of those snippets was intelligence is a plague. I love that idea. So I'll just send myself these like ideas. And then when I need to start writing, I'll just kind of read through the email list and go, you know, what's really speaking to me now? What hits me hard? What hooks me? And then I'll just follow that down the rabbit hole of the song.
You mentioned Intelligence is a Plague. I really like that song on the new album. And maybe my interpretation is incorrect, but as I read that song, and you can tell me I'm wrong, or maybe you can leave it up to the listener and not respond, is you're speaking from, I guess, the bad side. You know, you're playing a bad guy in that song with that phrase. Would you agree with that, or maybe not?
Yeah, a lot of parts are satirical. Like I'm not saying it; it's people.
Right.
The phrase "I think, therefore I speak." It's a lot of people nowadays are going, well, this is my opinion, and so I'm right about this. So it's like, no, you don't have facts, you don't have education behind it. It's you have an opinion, that's fine. You can express your opinion, but don't say that it's a fact. Like that this is happening because you don't know. There's scientists who do know that, like. Okay, so only 85% of the icebergs were melted in the 2020, and we, you know, of what was predicted to happen, and that's like, so your opinion is like, well, not all of it happened. So global warming, no, it's so frustrating that people go off of their emotions when it comes to justifying their opinions. They're not with facts. And so that line was that. But yeah, intelligence as a plague is just a shot down of people who are educated by people who want to feel that they know more just because they feel it.
Oh, great. I'm glad you said that. So we've got like two or three questions split off from there. We're going to hit them all. The first question from that is, I feel, and maybe you feel it, maybe you don't, I feel that there was a lot of damage done during the Trump presidency as regard to discussion and reasoning and logic. And, you know, it's like, you know, there's a pedophile pizza ring controlling the world. It's like, you have no evidence, right? Right. So my point is, now that that era might be over, is the damage irreparable, or can we come back to some semblance of discussion and logic like we were, I would argue, in the 50s or 60s, although maybe or 70s or even 80s, or maybe we never had that, and maybe that was all an illusion. What's your perspective?
I don't think we ever had full transparency with intelligence. I think we're, as a species, the reason why Trump era did so thrived so well, it's because that's part of human nature. We want to be complacent. We want to be easy. We don't want to be challenged. We want to feel right about how we feel. And so it's always been a part of us. And so people don't want to have the status quo be challenged, because if you're on the side of the status quo that it does well for you, why would you challenge that? And so it's not like that era has ended. We can go back to normalcy. It's, we always have to fight for that normalcy of like, let's talk, let's discuss, let's educate, let's debate, let's feel uncomfortable, and let's not ever get comfortable. And if we continue to do that push, and just, as long as we try, then we're on the right road, but we're never going to accomplish it. But it's the cheesy phrase. It's not the end game, but it's the journey. So as long as we continue the journey, we're doing okay as a species.
Not to get too cosmic or too off track or too wacky, but you know, Integrity has a song called, or an album called, Humanity's the Devil, and it's based off Gnosticism. And the idea is that human beings are inherently bad. Do you agree that human beings are inherently bad? Like, would the world be better off with no humans and everything else?
Yeah, I think we're inherently bad, but we're also inherently good. I think we're animals on this planet, and our curse is our intelligence and self-awareness. And so we act like animals. You know, I think in the animal kingdom, there's hierarchy, there's betas, there's alphas. The weak eat the strong eat the weak. I think that's very relevant. There are animals that move in packs and they have to thrive in packs, and when they don't, they die. There's animals that just do so. So we're part of that in this world, on this planet. But because we have this intelligence, we just fuck it up. So I don't think we're necessarily like evil or good or bad. I just think we're animals with an intelligence, and we're making decisions based on that intelligence and self-awareness.
I said I wasn't gonna get too wacky. One last wacky question, then we will get back down to concrete questions.
I love wacky shit, and I can't help it.
Human beings, how many years do we have left? 100, 1,000, a million?
Ooh, I don't know, right? That's the age-old question. I will say, I think like every generation always thinks they're the last. Every generation's like, this is it. We're either going to kill each other, or there, you get the religious types like, this is the end of this. And we've been thinking that since probably civilization started. So while we could think about it, I'd rather just enjoy what we have right now.
You know, I never thought, you're right, that like, apocalyptic prophecies go back 5,000 years, and it still hasn't happened. So maybe we should just don't worry, be happy. Yeah. But listen, let's get back to the concrete with regards to intelligence as a plague. I really like that song. It's one of my favorite kinds of songs, in that, at least in some aspects, it's the bad guy talking. My favorite example is Police Truck by Dead Kennedys, where it's the bad guys singing the song, you know. Mm-hmm. But I feel as though that's harder to do in 2021, because it's so easy for people to, and maybe you disagree, but I feel people are less willing to investigate nuance in a song and automatically says, oh, this person wrote this, so they mean this. And it doesn't always have to be satirical. Sometimes someone could just be investigating a concept, even if they don't agree with that concept. Do you agree that it's harder to write that kind of art in the current age, or maybe you don't agree?
I don't think it's any harder than it has been, at least for me personally. And if that's the dialogue that sparked, you know, of somebody jumping to that conclusion, maybe they needed to experience that art so they can go to that conclusion and be confronted with what they think is incorrect or correct. Like, that's not, like you said, sometimes it's just satirical. And if they want to jump to that conclusion, maybe them jumping to that conclusion will make them dig deeper and go, oh, okay, maybe it wasn't like that. And maybe they still think, you know, they think they take a song at face value. Art is art, and you can't control how it's interpreted.
I do love, and we're not going to talk about Trump much more, but I do love, like, Trump would, like, play songs by, like, Neil Young or whatever, and Neil Young would be like, I mean the exact opposite of why you're playing that song, and he'd be still like, no, it's for me, you know, so it doesn't even matter. Anyways, noise, noise, noise. The concept of noise. Why is the concept of noise important, or what does the concept of noise mean to you?
I think it really hit home the first show back. It was with Get Dead, and we were doing a little weekender, and I remember just after we played, they played, and it was just this wall of sound around us, and it wasn't the best of sound. You couldn't hear everything super clear. It was just like, it was kind of like a little divey bar show, but it was this wall of sound where you couldn't even hear yourself think, and it felt so good because I haven't been around that, like, hug of sonic pressure around me, and where I felt so connected with everybody in the room. Even if I wasn't talking to them, I just felt this pressure against me. So I love the fact that I was, it was like swimming through noise. It was wonderful. I miss that. The pandemic really took it away from us.
Is noise, noise, noise a wink towards the Dam, or do the Dam not own the rights to the word noise? Maybe the Dam shouldn't own the word noise. Lots of people use the word noise. You know,
totally. Actually, it is. It's a nod to a local record store that used to be here back in the day, Costa Mesa, called Noise 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 Records. That whole song is about like nostalgia through music and the punk scene. And one of the places we would go to as kids, besides Bionic Records for me, was this place, Noise Noise Noise. It was where we discovered like new music and records, and just it was like cool to hang there and like see other punks and people. It was just. It was a hub. It was a hub for the youth in my days.
Are you a record collector?
Yes.
What are some of the crown jewels?
Ooh, it always changes, you know. I really like this record called Theater of Fate. If I'm not mistaken, Possenon, or was it? I forgot who produced it, but Theater of Hate, it was just this weird like 80s like instrumental psychedelic noise punk stuff. It was really cool. I think that's kind of cool because it's so obscure. But I have one of my favorite is I have Alton Ellis on a 7-inch of Dance Crasher, and that's probably one of my favorite songs.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty real cool. What's like the first record you remember getting yourself?
Oh, good question. I remember getting it from Bionic Records, and I got, I think it was three. I got Final Conflict. I got, oh my God, I can't remember.
How old are you when you're getting Final Conflict? Because honestly, I didn't get Final Conflict till I was like 32. So how old were you? Were you like ahead of the curve?
Well, no, Final Conflict, Ron was just a local person from our scene. And I don't think back in the day, Final Conflict was like huge. It was just like this band that would play at public storage.
Just around.
Yeah, it was a huge local band. And I thought that was like the world. So I was like, oh, Final Conflict. And, you know, you'd see it on back patches at shows. And seeing patches was always helping me. I was like, okay, I got to check out this record on this person's body. Okay, and then this band. And that's how I got into Toy Dolls. I was like, oh, that's a cool patch. And check out Toy Dolls. So Final Conflict. And it was Adolescence. I think it was a live album on a white vinyl. I think those are the two first ones that I got. And some other band that I can't remember that I never became a fan of because it was like a live album too. I'm like, oh, this band's terrible. But it's like a huge band. I can't think of it since in my life. It's like a crust band.
I'm trying to think a live crust band record. Probably not Anti-Sect, not Amoebix, not Misery. Well, anyways, maybe it'll come to us. Anyway,
yeah.
So, how old are you at this time when you're getting these cool records?
High school. Like I was probably, I think I, because my high school, the other side of it was literally Bionic Records. So my days were, I'd get out of school and I would walk over to Bionic Records and hang out for a while. And then finally I'd get a ride home. So I, yeah, probably about like, well, I don't know how old people are in freshman year. What is that? 13? I don't know. It's like million years ago. 13, 14.
So I mean, was there like a punk contingent in your high school? Were you like the cool guys or whatever? Or was it just you all by yourself?
No, there's definitely a scene at my high school. But I wasn't the cool guy. I was the little sister of the cool guy. My brother, he's the one who taught me how to play drums and guitar and all that stuff. And got me into punk, got me into being a musician. He was actually like in a band. He was in the cool band called The Basils and like Radio 86 and Right Hook Bob, RHB, I remember. And I was in a band with him. Like he taught me how to play drums. And so I was in a band called The Basils. And I was like the cool little sister of Bishop, you know, everybody called him that. So yeah, there's a punk scene there. And eventually, you know, they grew up because 4 years goes by pretty quickly. And then I was the oldest there. And there really wasn't any younger kids, I think, in the punk scene. I think it kind of died after us in that high school. But it was predominant.
Joe Strummer, amazing songwriter, you know, a lot of great lyrics and influence on a lot of people. I'm a huge Joe Strummer fan. A trouble that I've been having with Joe Strummer over the past 3 or 4 years or so, amazing musician, amazing, you know, treat people fairly, you know, don't be oppressed, don't, you know, fight back oppressors, blah, blah, blah. But honestly, maybe not always the nicest guy, you know, how do we deal with that?
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? Like, by the nicest guy?
Well, I feel free to disagree, and you could even challenge my facts. It's famously, when his wife was pregnant and giving birth to his kids, he was running around Spain, you know, being kind of a wild guy, you know? And so it's like, well, I don't know. How can you speak to universal truths if you know, you're not even taking care of your own family? But maybe you disagree with that, you know, or you know what I mean? And Joe Strummer isn't the only guy to have this problem, you know? Bob Marley, Martin Luther King. Gandhi and anybody you name tends to have these problems, you know.
I think we're all fallible as humans. Everybody can make mistakes. I don't think that necessarily means that you should be discredited for trying to do the better thing for humanity. I think there's definitely some black and whites of like, no, you like fucking Bill Cosby, like no. you might have done a lot for the black community, but I can't support that. That's black and white. There's a gray area. I can't say yes or no to that. But yeah, was probably his wife. Did she think he was a piece of shit and angry and hated him? I don't know. I can't get inside of her head, but maybe. But I don't think it's too gnarly. It's the fact that he didn't want to try to make the world a better place just because he himself suffered from being shitty sometimes. I've been shitty. It's like you said, it's just you got to try. You're going to be shitty. You're going to do shitty things. We're shitty species, but as long as you keep trying to be better, that's the most important thing.
Well said. Speaking of trying to do better, as I understand, the original version of Noise, Noise, Noise was kind of rejected by the engineer and you guys went back and reworked it and made it much better than it was. Is that accurate or something like that?
Yeah, a lot of the songs in this album, the first set that we sent off to our engineer, our producer, he just was like, no, these need to be redone. Noise was actually the only one where he said, this is good. This, like, we don't have to do much to this. I don't think you need to, like, rewrite this. We just need to move some parts around. Mike and Yotam helped added some melodies and some different chord changes. But we didn't have to, like, gut that song. I think it was the only song that stood on its own merit.
Well, I think you guys did a great job, and I think the songs pop and sound fresh. There's always the fear of overworking something, you know, and it sounds to me like you guys got this. You bake the pie, the pie's done, and you pulled it out of the oven. You know what I mean?
Don't want to overbake.
How do you walk that line? Or is it just luck?
It is definitely luck, but this is why we love him to death. Cameron is an amazing producer. I have this insane amount of trust. The first album we did with them, Keep Them Counting, I was nervous because I'm like, I've never worked with a producer and I want to definitely open up my mind and to new ideas and be challenged and get frustrated and listen to somebody else and go back and forth. So Keep Them Counting was a good experience. And then after that, I realized, oh shit, I trust this guy like almost 100 million percent. So going into Keep Them Counting, I maybe that's why I didn't give him the songs as good as I did the first time. Cause I'm like, I know you're going to get something out of me, Cameron. He's magical. I trust him. He's the one that he knows not to overbake, but he also knows we need to add a little bit more because it's too bland. We need to make it special.
Have you ever had a circumstance where you're like, I know this is right. I know this is perfect. And someone's like, no, it's not right. And you're like, no, it is right. And then you were right and that it was right. Have you ever had that battle?
But what's right and wrong in art? And that's, again, why he's really awesome about this, because I can want, like, okay, the end of New Skin, the whole song changed. But at the end, I had this, we must not drown in history, like a chant, we must. And he's like, that's too basic. That's too bland. That's very obvious punk rock. But I told him, like, but that makes me happy. So I want to keep that. So that's something he goes, okay, if that makes you happy, let's put that in there. Do I agree with you? Or does he agree with me? It's a gray area, but that's what art is for. Like, you got to make yourself happy too, as well as like fans and people who interpret it. So it's just this balancing act.
What's it like writing and working with Fat Mike or Mike?
Very fast. He's very, 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 very fast. The guy writes, it's so hard to keep up. Luckily, I had the foresight to get I have like a little app on my phone, a recorder. So I just hit record. Like the first time we went up there to kind of just jam on some stuff, I only recorded a few parts and a lot of stuff passed me by. And I'm like, crap, I don't remember like a lot of the stuff. He'll start from this chord and then change to this chord and then go, we'll go from here to here. Okay, no, we're going to change it this way. Okay, we go up and down. He just was so fast that the next time I went over, I just left my recorder on. Like every time he talked, I just hit record. I'm like, whatever this is, I have to record this because I'm going to forget.
Do you think the name Fat Mike hurts his feelings? I know he kind of named himself that or was named that, but I feel like even he refers to himself as Mike and rarely Fat Mike. I feel like maybe people might be somewhat insensitive with that name, but maybe not. I mean, you think the question is, does Mike care about being called Fat Mike, or does he put up with it, but he doesn't love it? What's your perspective?
I have no clue, because on one hand, you have him as a human being, just the non-artist who is, you know, Michael Burkett. And then you also have this persona of who has gained success and fame and really has gotten to the level of, wow, who is the character, not the character, because he's not like two-sided, but this person who is Fat Mike. So as an artist, you always have two sides to you, because, you know, I'm not Brenna Red all the time. I like to try to, but that's exhausting. You know, sometimes I'm just myself, a slug on the couch doing nothing cool. But, you know, can you be mad at a part of you that has gotten you success? And as artists, we do tend to self-loathe a lot. So maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. There could be different. There are many different aspects to that.
Do you have self-loathing?
Oh yeah. I fucking hate myself. Ugh.
Really? Why? Oh,
I don't know. I could talk to somebody about it, dig back and where does it come from and this and that. But I've learned it's just the way my brain thinks. I'm very emotional person. When I was younger, I didn't think I was that emotional, but as the older I get, I could cry at the drop of a hat. I'm full of emotions and I'm always up here or down there. So I guess that can kind of relate to how I view myself. Sometimes I'm feeling super confident and like, I fucking got this. And then sometimes I'll feel just like a waste or there's something called imposter syndrome where it's like everybody out there like might think I'm good and like my music, but I'm like, I feel like a fake, like I'm not. They're gonna discover me any minute and realize that you're not as cool or awesome or this or that as we thought you were. So that's like a fear. I have no idea where it comes from. No idea. But I think it helps me. It helps me when I perform live. It helps me when I write. It's part of me and who I am.
Do you think Iggy Pop has self-loathing? Because I think Iggy Pop's pretty happy to be Iggy Pop. But who really knows?
Who knows? You know? Who knows how well he deals with his internal struggle and his own mental health? I think maybe when he was younger, probably, because substance can always, substance will fuck with your head no matter what. It'll rearrange the chemicals. Maybe as you got, he got older and healthier, he was able to balance that feeling. If he had it, I would be, imagine it's easier to balance it out.
That was a really dumb question. John, do you think the guy rolling around in glass has some degree of self-loathing? That was a really dumb question. Well, Brenda, good job for cutting through that. No problem. All right. So let's see. What's something on the new record that you think is really going to surprise? Well, actually, oh, give me action. Is that a wink towards Iggy right there on the new album?
A little bit. That's, well, also Elvis Costello, for some reason, there's no action, you know, there's no action. That actually song, it started off with, I just had that phrase, give me action. And just on a repeat with some like melody, and we were kind of writing it. I'm like, I don't know if I want to say that, guys. It's kind of like plain and boring. What does that even mean? And so I use it as a place filler. And then they were like, no, I like that hook, that I like that phrase, give me action. And Cameron was like, yeah, it brings up energy. So that's when I started to write the song about what does give me action mean? Like start something, like let's create a fire. So, and then that's where that song grew from, just from that one phrase.
I got just a couple last questions for you. Panic Dreaming. What's that about?
Death and depression and what's life and the meat, like super cosmic stuff. Speaking of that, super, super astral plane.
Do you think about that stuff a lot?
Oh yeah. When I was a kid, I still have trouble sleeping to this day. Like I've never been one to be okay with my own thoughts, especially at night. Like I remember as a young child, not even like a teenage with the chemicals running around your brain with puberty, like maybe like 5 or 6, being terrified of thinking of this kid, either A, when you die, that's it, nothing, blackout, or time goes on forever. And then you're going to be living forever. Like that's eventually that's going to become hell. Like the song Elvis Costello, it's the same thing. Heaven is hell in reverse. Like, so this is fear of like, I can't escape this unavoidable, just whew, that kept me up at night. And so that is like the premise of it. Like, how do you deal with death?
What do you think happens when somebody dies? Or maybe you don't know.
No idea. We can guess as much as we want. But like the Shakespeare said, that's the rub of it all.
Brenda Red quoting Shakespeare, not too shabby. A lot of people are under astrology these days, and Satan, like faux Satanism and real Satanism and all that kind of stuff is, you know, more popular now than it's been since like the 70s. Why do you think that is? Well, like go ahead. I'm sorry. But like in the 80s maximum rock and roll scene, right? Like 1988, if you came out and said, you know, we're witchy and, you know, we believe in, you know, tarot card, people would laugh at you. Now, if you come out, it's kind of a cool thing to do. It's almost like Stevie Nicks or something. You know what I mean? So why has people's perspectives generally changed? And feel free to disagree with my premise.
I mean, maybe because it's just there's more communication with the world with, you know, internet and information out there. People can discover more ways of life and what things are really about instead of just being fed, you know, what's coming out on more privilege every weekend, you know. As far as I understand, Satanism is about just indulging and embracing one's earthly existence. It has nothing to do with the actual, quote, you know, devil. It's more just being hedonistic and enjoying life here and being in balance with each other. And that in its own entity is a wonderful thing to do. Just like I said, I don't know what happens at the end of this. If people have religion and it makes them feel comforted, able to sleep at night, I'm super jealous of that. Like that's what, you know, safety for the crown, the heir in believing is the heir of believing. Like I'm jealous of that. So whatever it might be, as long as it doesn't cause any holy wars or, you know, the dark ages, let's find comfort in that.
Second to last question. We F the world. Can we undo the damage that has been done or is it too late?
I don't know. I would have to rely on people who have an education in that. My opinion is I don't know. The physical things of this world can be fixed, you know, like things are getting hotter every summer. I'm just like, I'm in California. I'm like, I don't remember it being this hot in August when I was a kid. And I'm like, things are becoming exponentially bad. And what's the solution there? I don't think we can make this planet colder, like, and fix things and or colder and hotter when it needs to be. Like, the damage is done. So how do we just put a band-aid on it to stop the leak? I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, there you have it. I think no one does. And I guess, as Operation Ivy says, all I know is I don't know nothing. And that's what we're all agreeing on. Brenna, anything else you want the listeners to know about or to check out or anything?
Just keep track. All of our tour dates are going to be posted on, you know, fat.com. And also on our Instagram, we post stuff constantly. And we're going to be hitting the road as hard as we can this year. We got some stuff planned in summer for the EU. I think one festival in France, too. And then we got another tour in November.
You guys are hitting the USA this November, right?
Correct. Yeah, we're starting November 3rd or 4th, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so they've got a lot of dates. So you can check those out at fatrec.com. And the band's got a brand new album out, Noise, Noise, Noise. It's cool, and you should check it out. You can check it out on Bandcamp. It's out now. And let's listen to WFTW. And Brenna, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Target for the 25 and oh so white patriarchal role we resolve. Are we the only people on this stupid planet having yet to fall? We fuck the world, set the flame, melt it down and watch it burn. Black till it's dry and there's nothing of worth to redeem. We're a pagan infestation, humanity is shitting, not a meaning goodbye. We don't kill each other. You get it, we fuck the world.